and I'm trying to believe, waiting for the right time.
We went too fly to partake in all this hate. We are here vibing.
My name is Paloma, and you are listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Art Omai in Ghent, New York. Open daily from dawn until dusk. Art Omai Sculpture and Architecture Park presents the work of contemporary artists and architects across 120 acres of field and forest. Now accepting advance registrations for visits on weekends and select holidays. Information at artomai.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Tunstall Studio Publishing of Craryville, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Good evening and welcome to Race Talks this evening with me, your host, Kimberly Y. Irwin. And I would like to welcome today for our topic on Juneteenth, which is also the term for the day, which is also considered Freedom Day in America. We're going to have as guest today Tanya Jackson, who with Lady Moon Badilla has produced a wonderful event in Columbia County, where we reside, and has made this year the second year that she would be and other in her crew will be hosting the event down in Hudson at the Front Street Park. And so I think it was very interesting today to speak about Juneteenth, because I was actually in class with another member of the prominent Badilla family in Hudson. And we saw in a classroom, a social studies classroom, placards, about 20 of them, two different rows, basically showcasing all the major events in history in the United States. And I recall saying that I liked one row of placards more than another row of placards, but we couldn't agree on why his row of placards that he preferred looked better than the row of placards that I prefer. But I went over and looked at the ones that he liked, and they showcased a lot of different people of different ethnic backgrounds in the United States. So he mentioned that that was one of his reasons for preferring that group of placards dictating American history, because it included so many diverse backgrounds and cultures. I agreed about that. However, I went closer to look at the very first placard that started, and it said 1619. And it mentioned slavery, how the first slaves were brought to the New World. And I told him immediately that I would have probably preferred that row of placards too, because it included so many diverse cultures. However, I didn't really like that it started in 1619 with enslaved Africans, because that's not the start of this new world. Of course, if you have a perspective that is European American, then you may have that as a thought. You know, what did we do as European Americans when we came to the new world? However, there's a history, of course, of this space that we now consider North America and America, the United States of America. And it really was before 1619. So if Though he's not right, though he's not wrong, he can certainly prefer that, and it makes sense to, you know, to feel comfortable and to like the more creative and inclusive placards for the history of America. But I just wanted that one placard before that to include maybe the first African who actually ventured to the New World in the 1500s. And that could be the start of this new world. But anyway, we're going to talk about slavery because we're going to be talking about Juneteenth and why, of course, it's considered Freedom Day. In fact, before I bring on the great speaker today, Tanya Jackson, I'm just going to share a 2-minute, very brief, small history that I found on Juneteenth that I thought would be really great to take us into that period. It's called The History Behind Juneteenth and Why It Resonates Today. And right before I put that on, I'm going to record so I can definitely have
this meeting is being recorded.
Available. Sorry, I should have hit that before, but that's what we do sometimes on air. Okay. I believe it's here on the screen. And here we go with the history behind Juneteenth and why it resonates today. And this was presented by the Washington Post.
Transition. Juneteenth, a cross between June and 19, commemorates the official end of slavery in Texas on June 19th, 1865. That's over 2 years after the Emancipation Proclamation was signed into law by President Lincoln. News of their new freedoms was slow to reach some slaves throughout the country, and historians theorize that Texan slave owners suppressed the information in order to get one final cotton harvest from the slaves. On June 19th, 1865, Major General Gordon Granger and Union troops arrived in Galveston to announce the war had ended and deliver General Order No. 3, which proclaimed that all slaves were free. The first official Juneteenth celebration took place in Texas a year later and became a state holiday in 1980. Juneteenth is celebrated in many ways, ranging from parades to cookouts and other activities. But Juneteenth isn't just about celebrations. It also serves as a time to further the conversation on the legacy left by slavery in the United States and as a means of discussing ways to address it, like the hotly contested topic of reparations.
We recognize our lineage as a generational trust, as inheritance. And the real dilemma posed by reparations is just that, a dilemma of inheritance. It is impossible to imagine America without the inheritance of slavery.
First sponsored by John Conyers in 1989 and reintroduced every session until his retirement in 2017, the Commission to Study and Develop Reparation Proposals for African Americans Act tries to tackle the subject. The bill is now sponsored by Texas Democrat Sheila Jackson Lee in the House and Senator Cory Booker in the Senate.
Though I am gratified that we are having this hearing on Juneteenth, for those of us who understand Juneteenth, 2 years after the proclamation, Emancipation Proclamation, there were those Africans who did not have freedom until 1865. H.R. 40 is in fact the response of the United States of America long overdue. Slavery is the original sin. Slavery has never received an apology. This commission would be comprised of members selected.
Okay, that is the small introduction that I had, and there's so many topics with which to speak about, and we will do so after my introduction of today's guest, Miss Tanya Jackson. Good evening, Tanya.
Good evening, thank you for having me.
I think I'm going to have to ask you to speak up one more time. I'm going to read some of your bio, and maybe we can have you get a little bit clearer with the mic in the meantime.
Okay. How's that?
Oh, that's excellent. But shall I share some of your bio, or would you like to do the honors?
No, go ahead.
Okay. Ms. Tanya Jatsu is an independent media maker, media educator, and program administrator with a passion for cultural programming rooted in social justice. She has invested in the empowerment of youth and under-resourced communities for more than 20 years by leading developmental programs in the nonprofit sector that foster life skills, digital and media literacy, as well as providing media production training. She holds a bachelor's degree in communications from SUNY Albany and a master's degree in broadcasting, telecommunications, and mass media from Temple University in Philadelphia, PA. Woo, we both went to Philly for our master's programs.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we can talk about that. After returning home to her native New York in 2012, Tanya, yay, served as the co-director for Educational Video Center's flagship program, the Youth Documentary Workshop, curating high school students from across New York City to produce 20-minute social justice documentary films until 2016, which I might add, we should do every year. That's a program that could we could certainly foster creativity with our young people for showcasing the happenings of our society. We should always remember in that way. So you've also worked as a freelance videographer, a teaching artist for various nonprofit organizations. You're a youth program manager and film reviewer for Black Star Film Festival in Philadelphia. I thought that was exciting. And as a Hudson City School District educated student, you have a really fabulous understanding of our history in Hudson. And of course, you're a Columbia County resident. And you were a visionary alongside your cousin, Nganda Badilla, who organized Hudson's first annual Juneteenth celebration in 2020. So I'm just thrilled that we were able to have one this year, you know, because of our pandemic problems. I didn't think that would be a possibility, but you are proud now to be organizing Hudson's second annual Juneteenth celebration. But this time you have more people supporting you and helping you. And I'm so excited for you to be on the show today, because this week we'll be celebrating Juneteenth. And I just wanted to note that 1619 was the year that was documented as the first enslaved Africans coming to this new world. And if you play the numbers, like my mother and many other people in the county played before and currently do, if you look at those numbers, we are in June 19th at 619, and this is 1619. So that seems to have something to do with it too, in the aura of history. So please, Tanya, introduce as much as you can for us about this upcoming and past Juneteenth celebrations, and specifically why you thought there was a need in this area specifically to have such an occasion, host such an occasion. And please share with us all of the great people who are helping you too, because they deserve kudos. We need it. And more so for just communion, if not for, you know, keeping our history intact.
Yeah, thank you for that introduction. And again, thank you for having me. I was, I guess I first want to speak to the video or the audio clip you played. I think I heard Ta-Nehisi Coates' voice and a few others. I think one, you know, yeah, and just, it's funny, I'm down at the waterfront, and I think the Badilla person that you speak of, I think he's down here teaching a boxing, taking a boxing session. I think he works at the high school as well, so I think I know who you're speaking of, and I'm watching him now, it's so funny. So,
I think he won the best row of placards.
Got it. Yeah, I think there's so many layers to unpack when it comes to U.S. history. And one of the things in that clip that, you know, I would speak to has to do with the original sin of America, not being the enslavement, but being the genocide of the Native Americans of this land. And that we would be the history of Black American ancestors would be the second sin, I would say, but deeply tied to the first one.
Absolutely.
Yeah. As you mentioned, the history of Africans coming to the New World prior to 1619, and that there is a deep history between Black folks and Native folks of this land. That still, I think, has a lot to unpack when it comes to the way that our histories are connected to each other, that we both assisted in each other's freedoms and sometimes adversely affected each other's freedoms. So yeah, there's a lot there to unpack, but for the sake of your question, to address your question, which is a lot. Okay, so if I begin with what, you know, Juneteenth, the celebration, can begin there and, you know, why we started it. So last year, during the initial stage of the pandemic, Ngonda Badilla, AKA Lady Moon, and I lived near each other. We lived near each other at the time on the same street. And so we would see each other in the community and had, you know, we would have moments where we, you know, pass each other's house and see each other and stop and talk about all of the, just what's going on. What does this mean? What does this mean for how we, you know, sitting still and thinking about.
To interrupt, but I think there's some feedback happening with your.
How about now?
And the wind or something that we're hearing.
Okay. I'll close the window. How's that? Better?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So, we were in communication with each other a lot at the beginning stages during the pandemic, March and April. We had both moved back to the area, to Columbia County from the city. We were both living in Brooklyn prior to that. And both, you know, having this passion and desire to use all of our skills and talents that, you know, we've amassed. You know, we graduated from Hudson, went away, developed ourselves as individuals and artists and programmers. And when we came back, we knew that we both wanted to bring our fullness to the community and serve. And had been, you know, having loose conversations about what that would look like. And she had already started a couple of initiatives, and we know that we wanted to do something bigger. And when the kind of Freedom Summer started bubbling around George Floyd's murder, a lot of protests were starting to bubble up, and the energy in the air, you know, around Black Lives Matter was starting to reach a fever pitch. And there started to be a lot of initiatives in the city and around the, you know, surrounding areas of Hudson, you know, rallies and protests. And we were starting to notice that a lot of those initiatives and rallies were not led by Black people. And we were noticing that we didn't seem to be in the conversation. And we were, you know, trying to figure out how do we engage our community as well as engage what is bubbling up to the surface at this point. And she initiated the idea of celebrating Juneteenth as a way of bringing attention to, you know, we love all of, you know, there's, you know, everyone now has a Black Lives Matter placard and, you know, it's all the rage to, you know, put lawn signs and signs in business windows and that kind of thing. But we felt like it was superficial. And we felt like there's so much happening in a city that is not engaging the community around the needs of the community and what we want. And so she said, you know, she initiated the idea of having a Juneteenth celebration where we can come together as a community and talk about what do we want to say about what is happening. What is it? What does Black Lives Matter mean to us? What does it mean to support and be in allyship or solidarity with, you know, our community? And so from there, from her, you know, pinpointing Juneteenth as a way of creating a mobilizing, you know, space around that, that's how that began. And so from there, you know, we contacted the community elders that we had grown up with and who were still on the ground doing amazing work in the community. And so we wanted to do this thing, and they rallied, you know, behind us and ensured that we could make it happen. And so we had the first celebration in front of Bliss Towers, because, you know, symbolically as well as literally, it is like ground zero for where the Black community in Hudson still exists. And so we organized it as a block party in honor of one of our cultural, you know, rituals of having joy and being together. And we had this amazing day where it was, you know, we wanted it to be intergenerational, and we knew that we wanted, you know, all ages of the Black community to feel seen, feel heard, and to have a space and time to, you know, to celebrate ourselves and our joy. And it was really, you know, serendipitous because our mayor, Kamal Johnson, had just designated Hudson to Juneteenth as a city holiday in Hudson, I believe a few, you know, the week before. And so it just, everything just fell into place in the sense that this feels right for us to do this year. And this feels right as something for us to have a celebration around. At this point, you know, Operation Unite still has the African Arts Festival in August, but there weren't any other festivities, cultural festivities that centered the Black community. And so we thought this would be, you know, an integral one that we could carry on beyond last year. And so that's how that began. It was a beautiful day. You know, we had, you know, all kinds of activities for the kids. We had drumming, we had double dutch, we had coloring pages for the toddlers, we had a sprinkler, we gave out food, and we raised all this money just through the community. The community itself, we said, we want to do this thing and we need, you know, money to put it on, and people just donated. And it was such a beautiful show of support. And then we ended the day with a procession of elders into a community panel discussion where they shared some of what their advocacy and community struggle over the decades that they've been here were about and what they would like to see moving forward. And then the mayor spoke at the end. And so it was great. It was momentum and the spirit of like, we should keep this going. Unfortunately, Gonda, not unfortunately, she's in the next chapter of her life and moved to California with her husband. But I knew and she knew that we still wanted to continue this. And so one of the things, two major things that came out of that Juneteenth celebration last year was a Facebook group emerged for Black residents to start to share with each other. It's like, let's see each other. What are we doing? How are we doing? And so we started a Facebook page for the community so that we can start to be in community with each other. And the second initiative that came out of that was Grow Black Hudson, which was an initiative of Gonda's younger sister Nkula Badilla, who is a, you know, a healer and an artist in her own right around, you know, she does a lot of bead work and she does healing work and with plants. Like, she's been a long time advocate and student of nature. And so she used her passion to start this initiative called Grow Black Hudson, in which she gets, you know, donations of soil and plants and seeds and teaches the Black and Brown community in Hudson how to develop and plant their own small gardens where they are. And so that initiative has grown into an amazing, amazing, just beautiful community service. And so, you know, so that's the, that was the beginning of what this is. And so in the spirit of that, on the shoulders of that, you know, it felt right to continue that on. And so what, you know, what I did this year, you know, was to like just keep that legacy alive and say, this is something that we continuously need. And so this year we were fortunate, we were fortunate to be able to partner with folks that are organizing a jazz festival here called Melodious Thunk, in the spirit of Thelonious Monk, as a play on his name. Yes. And so that was happening, and we were, you know, I was planning the second, you know, Juneteenth celebration. This will be the second annual at Bliss Towers again. And then I found out the Jazz Fest was happening, and I was like, you know, can we combine and make it one full day of celebration? Because jazz is also part of the long legacy and history of Black struggle here in the U.S. And so it just felt right for us to combine the two. And so that's how we ended up at the Waterfront this year, which I think is a beautiful venue for the celebration. And this year, which also allowed us to expand the activities and the offerings that we're going to have. And so it's going to be a full day from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. And initially we were going to do it on Saturday, June 19th, but Mother Nature and the ancestors, you know, seem to want us to wait until Father's Day. And so because there's rain forecasted, thunder showers forecasted for throughout the day Saturday, we've moved the festivities to Sunday, June 20th, which is Father's Day. But with the same schedule, we're going to begin in the morning with an ancestral offering from a sister who just moved to Hudson from the West Coast. Her name is Nia McKinney. She goes by Seven, and she is a comes from a long line of Afro-Indigenous folks of New England. She's from Connecticut. And she, you know, grew up with her grandmother teaching her the ways of healing and herbs and sound from the Afro-Indigenous community in Connecticut. And so she's going to be leading the day with a sound healing and an informational talk presentation around the Afro-Indigenous history of the area. As and then she'll go into
I'm sorry. I just want to jump in to make sure the listeners know what Afro-Indigenous is.
Mm-hmm. You want me to say, or are you about to say?
Well, no, you go ahead. I have an idea, but I don't. You know, I know what Afro and Indigenous means. So when I throw them together, a person who's coming out of Africa or the continent of Africa. Is that not?
Yeah. Yes. And so, yes. Yes. And the indigenous aspect is recognizing the what you were mentioning, the Black folks that came before 1619, having been here for at least a century prior to that, and those communities, you know, merging and forming. And so there's that Afro-Indigenous. So so it's the combination of those two cultures and those two, you know, those two continents. And you can have Afro-Indigenous, you know, in the diaspora, you know, Afro-Brazilian, Afro, you know, there's you know, that idea that the oldest of the cult of the people of a particular land is of African descent. And, you know, because our ancestors from Africa spread across the world. And that's how other cultures, you know, came, you know, sprouted from there. And so there's an Afro-Indigenous in most countries that span this world. And so for Nia, her Afro-Indigenous heritage goes deep and long in the U.S. And a lot of people don't know that, you know, you think of Native Americans and there's a certain hue of complexion and a certain texture of hair that comes to mind. And there is, and but what doesn't come to mind are the, what is considered the Afro-Indigenous tribes that are darker in complexion that, you know, you would, you know, there are a lot of Black people who are, who self-identify as Afro-Indigenous as in they are, have a just as much of a deep connection to the African roots as they do to their Native American roots. And when you see them, you would not, you know, because of the way that media and things, you know, portray Native Americans, you own, you know, like one look to them that, you know, people get to see. But there are a lot of tribes, the Seneca, the Algonquin, that there are a lot of Black folks who keep those traditions and those tribes alive, that you may not look at them and say, oh, that's a Native American person. You would wonder, you'd be like, oh, you know, yeah, that's a Black person. And they have grown up on reservations, and they have grown up in the culture and ways of the Native American heritage that they come from. And so that's what that speaks to.
Everyone is typecast, every culture.
Yeah, yes, every culture is typecast for sure. It is very windy down here. Give me one second. After I had a lawn chair out and I was trying to like have a little pretty time for this conversation, but I had to pack it up.
I'm looking at the flyer right now of the second annual Juneteenth celebration. And like you mentioned, with the first celebration, there was a lot going on. I actually don't like the hot sun, so I kind of venture out when the sun is going down. So I was there for most of the end. And my favorite part, outside the music and getting to chat with the people, some I haven't seen in a while. I too grew up in Hudson, but I've been away, as I noted while I was reading your bio, and returned also home to my community where I went to school in the district. And I reveled in listening to the elders. And it was very interesting how one of the elders currently is someone I grew up with. So it just... Right? Isn't that, it's like, wow, you know, now we are holding, you know, space for those who are coming after us. And that's why I think the support of Juneteenth and the organizers, you and the Bedilla, are so important. And I see that a lot of, well, not a lot, but a good number. And I want to give recognition to those organizations who are supporting the event, as you like you mentioned, Operation Unite, which has been here for over 20 years with a wonderful leader, Martin's Audio Video Services, the Spark of Hudson, AmeriCorps, I see Diada, Kite's Nest, and Loki Designs, and is that
Grow Black Hudson?
Grow Black Hudson, yeah. A little bit hard for me to see it, even with my glasses on. But I really did want to give a shout out because it takes a village and lots of organizations, like you said, to really pull something like this off. And we all need to come together. I'm looking at what I might be most interested in on here. And I have to say, it might be not the fun and the food, but the community quilt.
Yeah. I'm excited about that too. And before I go into that, I want to mention one new sponsor is the Hudson Tourism Board. Have recently I applied for their BIPOC funding, and and they've been able to support the project. They are excited to help make sure that it happens. So I wanted to note them as a sponsor as well.
Excellent.
Yeah. And so, the community quilt. So this year, I sat deeply with like, what could we bring to this space that, you know, is in the spirit of what Juneteenth is about, you know, Freedom Day. It's also considered Emancipation Day or Jubilee Day, depending on what region of the country you're in. And so I wanted to bring cultural elements that symbolically and literally have been, you know, elements that have kept us alive in a lot of ways and have also become cultural norms. Through ritual and through sheer just, you know, making a way out of no way. And a quilt is something that our community and our culture, and I know other cultures, you know, quilt as well, but in the Black community, in our heritage, the idea of taking pieces of fabric and making something useful, everyday use, as Alice Walker says, is something that we have a long history of, and it's one of the ways that sometimes we even take for granted, but it's one of the kind of everyday things that we have that warms us, that speaks to a family or region or community. It's historic in a way that is, you know, put together. And so last year we tried to have like a community banner, and we had paint out, and we wanted people to, like, you know, tag the banner, and we're going to have a community banner. And, you know, we didn't get too many people who did it. It was like a lot of, you know, most of the kids, you know, did, so, you know, a corner, but it wasn't, it didn't catch on the way that we wanted to. And I wanted to try that again, but in another way. And so the community quote was my year two experiment with what it would mean for the community to come together and have a visual, tangible a tapestry that says, you know, this is the Black community, who was here, this, you know, who's here right now in this time and space, that then can be seen and upheld for years to come. And so it was definitely something like, you know, in the spirit of that, and something that can be long lived. And so I'm really excited and hope that people really take to that. And we're trying to make it easy and not intimidating. You just get a patch, you personalize it, you know, you know, however you want. And you just, you know, you hand it to us, and we'll add it to the quilt, and somebody will be taking the quilt and putting it together after the event.
Oh, okay. So you don't have to bring a piece of fabric to the event because it's already going to be there, and you're just making it artsy and adding whatever represents you or your clan.
Exactly. Exactly. We're really trying to make this fun and easy for everyone. And so everything is free to the community, you know, outside of, you know, supporting the vendors and those, both the products vendors as well as the food vendors, and everything else is free to the community. You just to show up. The only other element in which we're asking folks to bring something is for the community altar. So Nia, who's doing the sound healing that I mentioned, she's going to be building a community altar. And for that, we want people to bring copies of photos of their loved ones past and ancestors and memorabilia of train, okay? Close the window.
I Hudson's so popular because we have the train station, the Amtrak, right?
yes. I didn't think about that when I decided to park here.
Yeah, we can't be unhappy with it. We can't be mad at Amtrak.
No, and it's such a beautiful sound. I always like the sound of the train. I do. It's loud and obnoxious, but I like it. But yeah, so the community altar, we're asking folks to bring photos, bring memorabilia. We're going to place them on the altar. We'll have somebody there who will be, you know, protecting the area throughout the day. And, you know, and at some point, you know, towards the evening, we'll before the sun sets, we'll take a picture of it and have it as a community memorable.
Now I see that the normal events like African dance and drumming is going to be there, but I'm looking at barbering with local 101 with, and I don't know if it's Lux or how am I pronouncing
yes. it? Yes. I believe it's pronounced Lux as well. Well, I'll see. So yes, that's also, I mean, I'm excited about all the things related to this, but yeah, those are new elements. So we wanted it last year, but we couldn't logistically pull it together. We wanted to provide, so in thinking about what are activities for different age groups to have on site that are culturally relevant, barbering and braiding were two of, you know, the, you know, mainstays of growing up Black, where, you know, going, barbershop talk, sitting at the barber, going to the beauty salon, were two main things. And, you know,
I was just talking to someone how, you know, you used to get up in the morning, sit between your mom's legs as she braids your hair to go to school.
Yes. It's communal, it's intimate. It's such a, it's tender, you know, these are tender cultural practices that, you know, provide, and it also, you know, they become mentorship, they become, you know, ways that folks, you know,
passed down, you know, sometimes problematic, but passed down to the next generation. And so my brother, Loki, who's an artist also from here, who, you know, went away and he moved back last year with his family. And he's an amazing artist. Like he does a slew of art, different kinds of art. And if you grew up going to Hudson High School in the 90s, you know, Mike Loki Wilkins is what he was called in high school, but he used to just do art on people's clothing in high school. And he's kept that tradition. Like that's been his artistry. As well as barbering. And he's been doing that since high school. And so, and, you know, went off and did amazing things. He was, you know, he was in New York Fashion Week, you know, right before, you know, last February. And he does wearable
on a WGXC radio talk show talking about his work in New York City and my children's mm-hmm. In February.
Oh yeah. And he, you know, and he had a children's book when before moving out of Hudson too, called Henry the Patchwork Whale. So he's been definitely in a community and there, you know, his art, he's like, you know, a Renaissance man in that way. And he is actually going to be curating some of the art installations during Juneteenth. So we have some art installation exhibiting Black Hudson past. We had exhibition, as it were, is what is growing into. It's called Black in a Day, and it is a celebration of Black culture of Hudson in times past, particularly Black spaces like Savoya's, the CC Club, the Hip Hop Chop Shop, which he ran in Hudson on Warren between, I think, 2nd and 3rd Street. It was
something I'm not familiar with, so I need to.
Yeah, that was in the early 2000s. Hip Hop Chop Shop, and that was in the early 2000s, but, you know, gentrification happened and he couldn't afford the rent increase. And so,
Hip Hop Chop Shop.
So the Hip Hop Chop Shop was a mix. It was, you know, we were born out of the hip hop era. So it was barbering and clothing and gaming. And all of the elements in this space. And he really was, you know, trying to be a space that kind of felt like a center for young people as well as a center for adults, you know, his age at the time. And so he wanted that intergenerational mix of, you know, those within the hip hop culture, whether they were young or grownups. And so the hip hop, it was a chop shop, he had all the things related to hip hop basically in this one space, and it was beautiful. And he would cut hair out of there, and the kids, they had a little gaming area and they can just hang out in there. They'd have community conversations. He sold art, you know, and he invited local artists to have their works displayed and sold in the space. And it was called Hip Hop Chop Shop.
Well, you know, when I'm looking at this flyer, I'm seeing the music elements, and you have jazz, like you mentioned, was, you know, birthed from out of the African-American diaspora and the community, and hip hop, which I don't see here, unfortunately. So I think next year, because we're going to do it again.
I can say something about that because I thought about that. And one last, let me shout out Shaquilla of Lux as well, because she'll be doing the braiding. And so those two things, it's for folks that are interested in learning basics of how to cut hair and basics around braiding. And so there'll be mannequins, you'll come up, we can only have a few people in the space at the time because social distancing. But a couple times during the day, they're going to offer lessons in barbering and braiding. And Shaquilla of Lux, she's a local shop owner, you know, beauty shop owner up on 66 by the A&W, that gas station by A&W. She has a shop over there. So I want to shout her out as well for being willing to hold that space. So, but to talk about the hip hop and the jazz, we do have we're going to have music, you know, this is a Black celebration after all, you know, so we're going to try to usher in the wobble, the electric slide, and the soul train line if possible. And so there'll definitely be some hip hop in the space at some point during the day, and perhaps some classic reggae, I hope. Okay. Yeah, so I have to, you have to get the DJ my listings of, you know, how to move the space. One of the things I'm hoping to incorporate, because yeah, jazz, hip hop, you know, has a long leg. And I was actually just on Randall's show talking about this. We got into this thing about, he, you know, these young people don't, you know, don't like jazz. We got to get them. I was like, you know, actually, there's a long history of hip hop really respecting and incorporating jazz into hip hop. Yeah. And there's a whole genre of artists that are very, you know, hip hop jazz as a subgenre. And so that is there, you know, jazz. I'm glad jazz is actually in the space, because musically it does have, it has something that its tentacles are in everything, you know? And so I think it is a very, beautifully placed element to have this year. Will the sound, you know, will the energy shift to have, you know, more of a, you know, jazzy feel? For sure. But I do think we're going to have a little bit of everything. Just put it like that. It'll be a little bit of everything. I think the only thing we don't have is some gospel happening, but maybe Reverend Singletary might come through and have something to say about that.
Now that we've seen it go from June 19th, which is where Juneteenth comes from, being in the month, the 19th day in June, Juneteenth. Mm-hmm. Wanted to make sure we got that out. But yeah, I think it's a definite possibility, because the churches, you know, they might, some of them are probably starting to open up to their congregation being live, and maybe some will sit down and do something.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe, you know, we are going to, you know, in terms of pulling the visual elements together, the Black churches in Hudson, we do want to, you know, shout them out in a visual way, you know, AME, Shiloh, Holiness Temple. Well, those are the three I grew up with. So I don't know if there are others that I don't know. But, you know, we can talk off camera if you want to let me know if there's some other
and they want to shout out, we'll give them the information that they can reach you to.
Yeah. So, yeah, you're right. That's Sunday. You know, it is Sunday. And so, perhaps they might, you know, catch the spirit and, you know, and do a thing. You know, that would, but you know, the ancestors have this. I really have been, you know, really sitting in that humility with planning all of these activities and saying to the public, you know, I'm just want to be a container and hold space for us to come together and see and love on each other. How do you want to be incorporated into this? And so that's the way that I've been doing this, you know. So we have a lot of vendors. I didn't even know we had this many Black entrepreneurs in Hudson. And so there are so many folks that have reached out and said, I would like to vend. I do this. That's been beautiful. There's a sister in Catskill who owns a hair supply store. And she was like, I also want to do an activity with kids to do t-shirts for Father's Day. And it's like, yes, bring your gifts. I met a young sister who reads tarot, and she's like a healer through the cards. And she's like, I wanted to come, but I wasn't sure, you know, if I could just come and post up, you know, I'm like, yes, you may come. I'm glad that you wanted to enter space respectfully, but this is for, you know, our long stayed, you know, residents, generational Black residents, as well as the new Black folk that have moved here. Cause I'm learning there's a lot of new Black people that have moved to the area that I'm starting to like meet and understand or hear. And it would be really great for this to be a space where new folks to the community and our longer standing families can meet and mingle and just be in joy, dance and love together. And so that's the idea. And I believe the ancestors have been like using me as a vessel towards that, because everything has just been lining up. You know, I haven't had to beg, and, you know, it's really been people saying, oh, we hear your Juneteenth is happening. How can I help? You know, and it's really been that energy, and it's been really beautiful. And I'm really humbled and honored and feel so much gratitude for that.
Well, I share in that, because when you mentioned, you know, Kim, come out, get your books out there and you know, set up shop, I was humbled and thankful too. So thank you, Tanya. And yes, I will be out there with my books to sign. And last year there was a woman with her book signing her books, and I didn't actually get to meet her. So I'm hoping she's out there too, because like you said, it's so many new people and it gives us an opportunity to really get together and to support one another. You know, Black Wall Street, right? Support and money, finances in the community allow those people who no longer live here, one particular person who, you know, is a great, you know, even his parents or his mom now, his father just passed away, but
shout outs to ADD.
Yeah, shout out. I'm sure we'll be representing also at the event, along with some other WGXC radio hosts, because you know we're trying to be providing the community with that, you know, the Afro diasporic voice. And so we're all going to try to be out there in support of one another. I'm looking at the last thing you have on the agenda, 9 p.m. to 10 p.m., or I'd like to say until.
Exactly.
Miss Juneteenth. Mm-hmm. So I want you to talk about that. I'm looking at the time, and I know you were thinking, how are we going to spend an hour of me just talking about Juneteenth? But we got there, right? So
yeah, we did. There's so much happening. Yeah, you're right. So yeah, Miss Juneteenth, I'll, you know, quick plug for that. It's so it's a feature film made by a young, well, I don't know how young she is actually, but you know, we all Black don't crack. She's from Texas, and she made this beautiful film centered on a Black side of town in Texas. And it's centered on the relationship between a mother and daughter and the father and one of the and the owner of the community, I guess the it would be their tavern or juke joint or, you know, the community club. They're Savoyas, basically, you know? And when I watched this film, I was like, oh, this is so perfect for Hudson. This is so perfect for the, you know, the Black community. It felt so small Black town everywhere, you know? And it's, so the story, and I'm not going to tell y'all too much. You could watch the trailer. But the mother was, you know, there's this pageant that this town had called Miss Juneteenth, and the mom was a Miss Juneteenth in her heyday, and she wants to pass the legacy on to her daughter, who doesn't know if she really wants to take this legacy on in the way that the pageant is, you know, organized. And she's, you know, she's coming of age in this, you know, in this time and era, and you know, still, you know, protesting in the spirit of Black Lives Mattering, and you know, reclaiming the Afro and all of these things. And she's feeling like this pageant is like this debutante thing that doesn't feel right to her soul. And so this film unfolds in their relationship through this community legacy that is related to Juneteenth. But it's such a poignant film that is character driven. The daughter's father, the woman's husband, like they have this relationship that has a lot of tension in it. They love each other, but he can't get it together, and he loves it. He's a beautiful dad, but it's so beautiful. It's so compassionate. It's so regular Black, you know, and it has these really beautiful elements around the, you know, around community space, around like the small Black business. And what does it mean to try to hold on to yourself, your family, and your community businesses. And so it was beautifully done. It speaks even to what you're saying about, you know, the legacy of Tulsa and, you know, the struggles to hold on to our community centers and spaces. And I really hope people, you know, stay, or, you know, those that aren't going to come out till later, you know, you know, bring your lawn chairs and your blankets, and
and enjoy that film. It's a really beautiful film.
Well, I think I know someone who's going to be popping popcorn. It's a Small World, and my cousin's husband likes to set up shop, usually cooking his, you know, desirable dishes. But I think he definitely will be out there with the popcorn machine.
Yeah, I'm hoping you're talking about Larry Lair.
Yeah, Larry Walker.
Yeah, I hope so. It's Father's Day. He was definitely set on the 19th. And so we'll see if he can. So, and it's also like, you know, I don't want to make the fathers work on Father's Day. So we're gonna see if we can still have their bubbly popcorn without him having to like be the one to do
it. My daughter was with him last week. On Saturday. So maybe they can step in and help too. We're coming down to the last 5 minutes of the show, and I don't want them to cut us off without talking a little about those people who have gone before us. And I know that one of the things that African Americans excel at specifically is, you mentioned the movie that we're going to be seeing, the film screening. And it's wonderful that now African Americans are not just in front of the screen. What is it called? Shuffling and what was it?
Shucking
about?
And jiving.
Yeah, shucking and jiving, but really, you know, holding our own and showcasing our strength in all endeavors, in front and behind the screen. So, but we do still have the go-tos, you know, the athletes that really have become successful and has showcased those talents also. So I know we don't have too much of that happening. I guess we can call the African dance people energy. and we're going to be doing all the different dances with the group. So we're definitely going to be moving, but we're probably not going to do any real sporting events at this engagement. But I just did want to give
There is boxing. And again, it's because this is a new development moving it to Sunday.
Oh, okay.
And so there are definitely activities that fathers were leading that it's really, you know, hopefully they can still lead. So Gunga Badilla, who is, you know, a local boxer, who, you know, went on to actually do boxing as a sport, you know, that was his thing for a while. He was leading a boxing class. So we're still hoping to have him to be able to lead that. Yeah. So between that and the dancing, those will be our movement spaces.
Okay. Sure. So guys, come ready to exercise. Ladies, I know you like to be beautiful, but make sure you bring something comfortable or just take the shoes off, right? Lovely grass, a grassy area.
Yes.
We'll be okay. And
yes.
I don't get any dogs around. So we
no, I don't think so. I don't think so.
Rolling around the grass. But you mentioned boxing, and I just wanted to give a shout out to some of the sports legends, because because I'm on only once a month, and the major sporting event is coming up now. Hopefully they will actually have it. Is going to be the Olympics, and we talked about boxing, and one of the boxing legend that passed away at the age of 66 is Marvelous Marvin Hagler. And there were so many who passed away. There's another Olympian who was famous for putting his hand up in the air in a sign of solidarity. People think of it as protest, but protest is also a sign of solidarity to the other people in a movement. So, and it was powerful, not that it was anti anyone, but it was pro African American. And I think people.
Tommy Smith.
Tyler Smith. Okay. I don't
really. I think it's Tommy Smith that you're talking about, the 1968 Olympics, that iconic
picture.
Yeah,
he's not the one that passed away. There were a few, but he was the most well known of them. I'm actually trying to see if I can pull it up right now. Oh, here it is. Olympic champion Lee Evans, who set a world record while winning the gold medal running for the 400 meter race in the infamous 1968 Summer Olympic Games, died. And he died in Nigeria. That's where he was at the age of 74. And there's a photo of him with the gold medal around his neck, giving the power to the people sign, right? So I wanted to give a shout out. And we have 1 minute left, and I can't leave since we're both women. I want to say, everyone pay attention to Simone Biles. She's the greatest of